You spit DIP, but its toxic chemicals can stay in your body. In fact, DIP can cause mouth cancer. And brushing your teeth doesn't make it go away.
Dip into the facts at therealcost.gov/dip. Brought to you by the FDA.
You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director at pa@wrct.org or by calling 412-621-0728.
Live from WRCT Studios in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Hour, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
I'm excited at another Total Education Hour every Wednesday and then goes live again through syndication throughout the week and also on Fridays in our flagship station, WRCT. I get excited because now I'm going to be an opinionated person. I'm going to be a person that really can speak out about something that I am knowledgeable about, and that's education. So I'm first excited to welcome my two co-hosts. We're going to have a fantastic guest to talk about teacher burnout, the first segment. My first one to welcome the program, my co-host, Jason, the public school guy. Jason, how are you, man? And are you burned out?
Not burnt out, but I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, and we could talk about that throughout the conversation, but I appreciate you coming on, and it's great to see you again. Pitt winning. Beating Penn State, that was a great game. I'm sure you had a blast.
It was a lot of fun being there.
I'm sure. And I also want to welcome to the program my personal assistant and co-host, Peter Elvidge. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing good. Today's been a ride of its own, but hey, that's just life, you know what I mean?
Yeah, life is a ride, and it definitely in certain ways. And what Phil's going to speak about today is definitely this ride when it comes to teacher burnout. So I'm excited to welcome our guest for the first segment, Phil Maycomer of the PACT, and also an educational consultant. Phil, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited to be here and chat with all of you.
Absolutely. And we talked about this off air, Phil, that as a consultant, you come into these schools at the beginning of the school year, and what do you see, especially in the summer and before leading up to the school year? What do you see out of teachers at the beginning that's really important to know and know that, hey, you know what, they're really ready to go?
Yeah, you know, I think that everybody is so pumped up and geared up at the start of the school year, and I think part of it is because of all of our dedication to be in the field and serve. But the other part of it is, I think that we all hold on to the belief that this year's going to be different.
Right.
Right? I mean, you've served in education for a long period of time. And, you know, it's almost like a rebirth that you have this renewed hope.
Yeah, we have this renewed hope, and that's so true. Every year, it's a new year, and that's why we get the summer, and we recharge our batteries and are ready to begin, right, Jason? That the next year, hey, we're going to do something different now, right?
Well, next year, you usually do something slightly different. You know, the longer you teach, you just kind of slightly change things to keep things fresh.
Yeah, definitely. And keeping things fresh, Phil. And that's what you see. Great intentions lots of the teachers have. They're ready to conquer the world. But your concern, especially coming on the show tonight, is what happens at a certain point in the school year?
Yeah, you know, I think that all of us try to embrace different strategies and learn from the previous year to the year that we're moving into. But when thinking that, oh, this year is going to be different, part of it is I think that teachers think that they're going to be able to gain more control of their classroom again. And they're not going to have initiative after initiative after initiative. And sometimes that's not true because they're not in control of all those decisions. And I see that so many times with the thousands of teachers that I support and train across the country, that their smiles start to fade as soon as the end of October, like by the time Halloween hits. And they start to feel like their stress is like skyrocketing because there's so many things to do and not enough time to really do them.
That's an interesting point. I'm going to go to Jason in a second, but I'm going to go to Peter for a second. Peter, do you notice that the years that you were in school, especially elementary school and high school, where teachers at the beginning, they have this renewed vigor and then things kind of change throughout the year?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems to be like, you know, at the beginning of the year, you know, they're full of energy. You know, not saying that, you know, everybody loses energy, but, you know, there are some teachers who I've had, you know, where have like a whole ton of energy and just raring to go at the beginning. And then kind of in the middle, you know, as we progress into the middle of the year, they start kind of slowing down a little bit, you know, feeling a little bit stressed out. And then, you know, obviously because, you know, when summer starts coming around, you know, we start getting a little bit more up there again because, you know, of the going from fall to spring and, you know, summertime and all that good stuff. At least it's from what I've seen from my aspect. So.
Right. And I'm going to give you my opinion in a lot of ways. I was one of those teachers that didn't do that, Phil. And Jason's going to start laughing and chuckling in the background on this one. But I constantly, okay, from day one to day 180, I was always the same. Excited to be there, motivated, kept going. But then I did see changes in classrooms. And I did see changes in classrooms. I saw, you know, we're teaching routines and procedures of Dr. Harry Wong's whole first days of school. And we're going to really keep that same routine, that same classroom management procedures, the same procedure, teaching bell to bell. And what I saw was my partner across the hall, teachers down the room, about 30 or 40 days in, that changed. And Jason, I'm going to, and you're going to, and Jason's, Phil's going to be definitely a pro advocate teacher. Trust me on this, Jason. I'm going to be kind of not the devil's advocate in this thing, but I'm going to agree with this whole teacher burnout thing. What, Jason, I'm sure you're the kind that stays routine from beginning to the end of the year because you know that's the only way to maintain control of your class, right? Having the same procedures, same expectations, same repertoire throughout the year and expectation, right?
I don't know if I can say that I keep everything the same. I think my expectations of my students remain the same. Okay, they have to have a certain level of effort that they bring every day and that kind of stuff. But I think it's to say that you're always 100%, you know, 180 plus days out of the year, I just don't believe that to be true. because everybody has lulls. Everybody backs down a little bit. Everybody has to take a blow and breathe. I mean, at the high school level, that's why you have, that's why you have those mental health days. You know, where you have the kids just doing something on their own, and you're not the one in front of the room directing instruction or guiding or something along those lines. The teacher burnout, I completely agree that there is some of that. And a lot of it has to do with administrative, with what the administration does by, as you said, adding more to the table every single year. But what you have to do and how you have to do it and when you have to do it and, you know, the bells and the whistles and the hoops that you have to jump through. Teaching would be a great job if you just get rid of the parents. Another phrase I hear from teachers all the time, too. I mean, it's the combination. The problem with teaching is you have parents who are bosses, administrators who are bosses, school board members who are bosses, and nowadays, sometimes kids who are your boss. So you're dancing to a lot of different masters and trying to keep everybody happy to still do your job.
And I'm going to go to Phil with some of the remedy or more commentary leading to a solution to this problem. And if we have to keep her on another segment, we definitely will do this and sharing and definitely will allow Peter to share in this conversation as well. But I wanted to add one more point to this. I did, and that's probably why I got out I literally loved the self-contained classroom, had the best test scores possible, had trading, and then had a partner, and then that was the draining part. It wasn't draining. The students didn't see it from 8 o'clock in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon, where I'm on the entire time. The school I was at, St. Agnes in Oakland, was a Extra Mile Foundation school, and we had visitors like McClatchy, WQED, certain people from PBS, certain donors that constantly, our doors were open all the time with practicum teachers. So you really did have to have that if you wanted to be the best successful teacher. But that's where I come home and I would be drained, or I would be tutoring somebody at 6:30 at night, literally feeling like I was going to die, because I felt the burnout, even though I didn't show it to my students throughout that whole day at the end, because we had to be on so much. And yet other teachers, Phil, weren't able to follow suit the way I was doing things. But go ahead, Phil, with your response to that.
Yeah, you know, I think that so many times we need to remember that it's not a sprint and it's a marathon, and you have to just maintain the pace throughout the year. And that's hard to do if teachers feel they have to reinvent the wheel every single time the curriculum changes.
Right.
Because curriculum demands and pacing guides, and there's different terms used in all different geographic locations, but for the most part, curriculum moves pretty quickly. And, you know, we know that kids really succeed when they know what's expected of them, but they also really succeed if they understand why they're doing what they're doing. And, you know, so many educators spend so much time having such success with explaining to kids and giving them the why of their instruction. And then the kids have much better buy-in and are meeting their curriculum needs. But that still doesn't solve the problem of the reinventing the wheel all the time. And I was compelled to try to assist with helping with that problem by creating a teaching framework that helps you not reinvent the wheel every time and decrease your prep time, because that's what it's about, because teachers don't even have time to have lunch throughout the day. And we need to be able to support them in their teacher evaluation systems as well.
And see, that's a great point, Phil, and we're going to go into definitely that point, that the amount of work teachers put in, the amount of different things, but yet not the guidance. Like, if you could have, and Jason spoke about this, and then I'm going to get Jason's point, because again, at the break, we're going to go right back to the point. Jason talked about such great in-services he had, where he got such great instruction from an expert teaching him specific ways of teaching kids that he learned from that process. Imagine if he was be able to have that all the time. Imagine if there were opportunities to whatever curriculum they changed to not mean, okay, I guess I'm not going to, my weekends are going to be planning all the time, and being able to take that curriculum and maneuver it over. So when we get back, more Phil Maycomer from the Pact, and we're going to kind of figure out how we can stop this teacher burnout. I want to ask one more question about what do we see in teacher burnout, and principals and administrators listening to this program, tell us what you think, and specifically hashtag EdChat and hashtag WRCT. You're listening to Toll Education Hour, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Hour on WRCT 88.3 FM in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org, and we can hashtag it WRCT. I'm with Jason, the public school guy, Peter Elvidge, and we're interviewing Phil Maycomer, and our topic is teacher burnout. So, Phil, what do we see? Now tell us what we see when teachers start to burn out. So even parents listening to this program will understand when we go to these open houses and they tell us the expectations, they tell us the routines and procedures, when can we identify that some of our teachers that teach our children are burned out too? So that it's not, we're not just looking at the administrators, we're looking at the parents so that they can support these teachers.
Yeah, you know, I think the common thing that I hear, and I'm sure all of us have been there when we feel overwhelmed or that we just can't keep up with the demands, like Jason said, about what the administration is putting on you, what the expectations of the school board are, and then also the parent expectations, is I hear the same line over and over again. I can't do one more thing. That
right.
is the tipping point, I think, for an educator when they feel, hey, I got into the field of education to make a difference, and I can't do one more thing because I'm not even feeling good about the things I'm doing. That is the beep, 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 red flag of we need to get some real solutions in here that are common sense educational approaches, as I call them.
Peter, a response to you on this. What did you see when you started seeing some of your teachers burning out? Not all of them, I'm sure, did. But what kind of things did you observe?
I mean, you know, like when teachers in my school got particularly, you know, they had a whole ton of things on their plate. And they started having a lot of stress and things. I mean, I'm a person who could tell, you know, I mean, I'd like to think of myself as being able to tell when someone's, you know, having a good or a bad day. And there would be, you know, some of these teachers where, you know, they wouldn't necessarily show whether they're having a good or a bad day, but you could tell by the way that they're, you know, that how they're teaching a lesson or maybe doing a conversation or maybe doing a PowerPoint or presentation of some kind, whether they, you know, have the energy, you know, and they feel like they're, you know, they're inspired and they're inspiring people. And then the other days where, you know, it's just like, you know, I'm trying to get this lesson out because it's, you know, it's something that I need to do because it's part of the curriculum. And I mean, it's you know, it's unfortunate because I understand that, you know, not being from a teaching aspect, but from an observer's aspect, I understand like there's so many moving parts to things that teachers, they can just get overwhelmed so very easily.
They definitely can get overwhelmed, Peter, and that's a great point. And then, Jason, what do you talk about, especially in meetings, to try to stop some of it, to make sure that the teachers, you talked about taking a mental health day, but what do you tell younger teachers that come in your building and you're mentoring in certain ways or having conversations, especially about, you know, being a leader in your building in specific ways and as a veteran teacher, teaching them to not have this burnout happen, to allow themselves to, you know, take a little bit, you said, of a day of a mental health day, but be able to come back hard and perform their job to the best ability.
My biggest piece of advice I get to any young teacher is they're entitled to their own personal life. Get out of the school. Go home. Don't take work home with you. Obviously, you do have to take some work home with you, but if you don't have to, don't. Go see a movie. Go hang out with your friend. Go take your spouse out to a date. Go spend some time with your kids. Some of the other things that go into this teacher burnout, beyond what the course load demands are and what the demands of the job are, is when you leave work, a lot of teachers take work home with them for an additional 2-3 hours of work every night so that they can be prepared for the next day. If they're cognizant of what's going on around them when it comes to their job, they're hearing so many negative things about teachers coming from politicians, specifically from the right politically, that teachers are bad and schools are bad and students are bad. So all you're hearing is this bombardment of negativity outside of just even doing your job and the natural stresses of it. So you have all these things culminating at one time that, from what teachers have told me, they feel completely and utterly underappreciated. They feel completely and utterly, you know, put on because everything that they do is put on top of them. And they don't feel as if that they are being appreciated for what they are, what they can do, or even what this profession provides for this country.
Definitely. Now, Phil, as you talked about the solution, one of the solutions is basically to make their life easier in their preparations every day. So they're not taking home tons of work all the time. What is your framework able to do to help teachers teach better and more efficiently? And then that kind of decreases some of the teacher burnout from what you've seen as going in as a consultant and also with the whole framework.
Yeah, I think showing teachers that by selecting some creative and engaging activities that speaks to their style of teaching, right? So Jason doesn't have to do what Peter does, and Peter doesn't have to do what Phil does, and Phil doesn't have to do what Neil does. But having some anchor types of activities that the students can really use helps teachers populate content as curriculum changes.
Right.
Meaning if you use consistent teaching activities, one, it decreases brain load for the kids because they focus on what they're learning and not how they're learning it. That it also decreases prep time. So you don't have to sit around and say, hey, how am I going to really teach biomes
right.
in science? You know how you're teaching science because you have an array of not boring, not, you know, consistency and predictability doesn't have to be boring. It can be creative and engaging, but it's anchoring students. You know, there's an adjunct professor from Harvard Medical School that comments and says, kids succeed when they know what's expected of them. Well, you know, teachers succeed if they know what is expected of the curriculum planning. And it's just been amazing to see, even as a result of our research studies, that teachers were reporting that their prep time significantly decreased using this type of consistent approach. And also that it's not 25 steps. Teachers don't have time to have a 25-step approach to curriculum. They need to focus and get back to basics of what the way the brain works for the most part. And as long as you cover these four basics of let's learn about it, let's read about it, let's write about it, let's talk about it, bam, you're delivering solid curriculum and you're not teaching to the test. You're really teaching to real-world knowledge.
And Jason, you talked about teaching. That's a great point, Phil. I wanted to jump to Jason for a second. Jason, you said in a lot of ways that you have to teach the test, but how do you make sure that you do it in a way the students don't know it's happening?
I'm doing it now with what I've developed in my classes is something I refer to as selfish teenager, which means, you know, because I teach teenagers and teenagers are developmentally selfish, what we do is I want the kids to be able to relate content back to their own personal life. So tell me how, you know, what a city state is and how it relates to your life. And that's higher, it's very high end thinking. It's also very high end learning. And most kids are capable of doing it. They just don't realize what they're doing. I think what you have to do is, however you do it within your classroom, develop a methodology that permits for the kids to do something that they're already familiar with, but they don't need to know that familiarity is, what they're doing is either new or complicated. They do complicate it already in their lives. They do complicate it already in their thinking. Utilize what they bring to the table already in skills that they already have established to help to enhance what you're doing within the classroom. And that's generally what I do with my kids. They don't realize that they're doing higher end learning. They don't realize they're doing higher end thinking. But they start to do it, and at first it's slow, but then they start to pick it up, and once they pick it up, it's an accelerator in the classroom, and next thing you know, the kids are doing high-end thinking. We're teaching to the test. Every teacher teaches to the test. That's a misnomer. But you're teaching to the test. You're allowing the kids to learn in a different way, which they're already familiar with, and you're not using the edgy babble that usually you get whenever you have an administrator telling you to do something.
Now, Phil, I wanted you to respond to specifically what Jason's doing in the classroom and kind of how you would break that down using your framework, what he was doing. I'm sure he's definitely on the right track, it sounds like to me, but how would you kind of approach that so that they have some of that prior knowledge, but also that they're learning throughout that process and not using a lot of the higher taxonomies in their learning.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I agree with what Jason's saying. I think that, you know, when he had said so they know what to expect, they know how they could succeed. And the point that really resonated with me was when he said they've got enough complication in their lives because we need to make education simplified for them so they can make sense out of it clearly. So then if the methodology makes sense to them clearly, then they could reach those higher level critical thinking skills and problem solving skills, right? And it has to be in a connect the dots way. Like this one lesson connects to this next lesson, connects to this next lesson, which then connects down the yellow brick road to the culminating event. And teachers who focus on the connect the dots learning in that type of methodology, and that's aligned to what you and I have talked about in the past, Neil, aligned to the PACT framework, how one lesson connects to the next one. Kids have a better understanding of why they're doing what they're doing. So then they start asking higher level whys, is what Jason's talking about. They're going to higher level parts of their brain for higher order thinking. You know, and also it also helps their executive functioning skills for planning and prioritizing and being able to then plan out long-term projects because they have better understanding of time management. And so there's so many different things that are interconnected with simple approaches.
And that's the big part of this is that you have to have prior knowledge when you learn. And if they don't have any prior knowledge, that's what the framework Phil does, because you have to, they have to do certain things and have certain things ready to, necessary to learn the next step. And then you connect that throughout the whole curriculum throughout the year. And that's the key component. For sure. And Peter, if you have any questions for Phil, this is more of a technical education. Our next two segments will get into more opinionated stuff for sure. But we really appreciate Phil coming by to talk about this, Phil, and tell us a little bit about your trip to St. Louis before we get off the air. You're excited about St. Louis. When are you heading to St. Louis to train administrators and higher ups in St. Louis to try to decrease that teacher burnout?
Yeah, I'm quite excited about this trip. It's part of my 2016 Make a Difference, which is the name of my company, Pay Forward campaign. So I'm out there the last week of September, which is coming up pretty soon, and I'm going to help assist teachers to simplify their teaching using the PACT framework so they don't have to really reinvent the wheel, and show them some ways to be able to decrease their prep time. And yeah, so I'm donating my full-day seminar and all my associated expenses, and I'm doing some free consultations in the schools, and hopefully it'll make an impact out there.
Well, everybody needs to figure out a way to make life easier for teachers, so I appreciate you calling, Phil, and definitely best of luck, and we'll definitely have you back when they have another interesting topic. Take care. All right. All right. That was Phil Maycomer. Take care. You're listening to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. When we get back, I don't know what I'm going to cover, but I have some fun things to get Peter involved. Trust me, the second half hour will be very, very interesting as people are driving in their cars saying, when is the Liberty Bridge going to be fixed? We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh. And we're streaming live at WRCT.org, hashtag WRCT. And I hope you didn't make the mistake if you're in Oakland and you decide to go towards, you know, the North Hills and the Liberty Bridge is out. So you're backed up forever. I did that trying to go to a specific company that I was frustrated about that they're going to hook me up with a couple things because for my time, and I couldn't make it. Jason, that Liberty Bridge, I know you don't have to deal with that, but dear gosh, that must have been that's a nightmare. When is that going to be fixed?
Yeah.
You don't know about that, Jason?
No, I wasn't sure.
That's for Jason.
I know about the Liberty Bridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know about the Liberty Bridge.
No, I said, what do you think? When's the prediction it's going to be back running again?
They said the 19th.
19th, okay. Doesn't seem like... Have you gotten caught in traffic from that?
No, I don't deal with traffic downtown.
I know you don't.
I'm a suburb guy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just did that and the whole thing. Peter, you have no idea about the Liberty Bridge, but it almost burnt. Yeah. It almost burnt to the ground, right, Jason? Based on some certain things.
Yeah, it almost collapsed.
Yeah, almost collapsed. And that is a bridge that it goes to our other flagship home, Bethel Park, BPTV. I don't know. I'm hoping it's fixed by the 19th. There's no way I'm going to try to go to Bethel Park, Jason, before the bridge is back up. That would be a really pain in the neck, wouldn't it?
I would say so. Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. Okay. All right. So I wanted to kind of talk about specifically, I am not going to release my health records at this point in time, just to let you guys know. I'm not going to be that transparent. And Jason, are you going to release your health records after the whole debate going on with the health records?
Absolutely.
So you're going to release those health records?
I don't know what my health records look like.
You'll release them for our audience. Oh my!
Well, I'm not afraid like Donald Trump is.
No, he was on Doctor. You got to tune in tomorrow to Dr. Oz and check that out.
You know what he said? He didn't say very much. And Dr. Oz didn't ask him anything. So.
But can you believe that when he's back by Oprah? What do you think Oprah was doing? She just wanted ratings, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and she just let him on and knowing it could help him. But okay. All right, let's kind of go back into specifically a topic I wanted to bring up, and that is, again, through the teacher burnout. Let's talk about teacher open house. I've been in two open houses in the last 2 weeks, so I wanted to share some things about open house and understand the weirdness of school and how we have these routines and procedures and parents go, yet they don't have any idea what's going to happen next. Now, Jason, sharing about open house, tell me a little bit about your stories with your girls for open house, like when you would go visit those open house opportunities at the beginning of the school year when they're in elementary school and stuff, not middle school and high school. We know it's a different story.
I mean, how my kids doing? Tell me how my kids are doing. And being a teacher, I'd simply just ask, well, what can we do to help support you in the classroom? And the teacher would tell me that. And we would do that, and it worked out. They just gave us some basic information about how my daughters were doing. Nothing really all that intriguing, or if there was a struggle, somehow they would do it. It was just a good communicative tool for the teachers to be able to talk back to the parents about any and all concerns and or strengths that kids would have about the parents would have about how their kids are doing.
That's a great point when you talk about, that communication back and forth type of thing, Peter. Now, do you remember when you were in elementary school, Peter, when your mom would head to those open houses and stuff, and only a couple weeks into the school year, and how nervous you were, maybe to show your work for them to get to see your work at school, but also just mom's feedback when she gets to talk to the teachers.
I won't get too much into my early years of school, but I had a lot of problems both with communications with teachers, but also with some of the assistants that were helping me with my blindness and visual impairments. I mean, it was a mix of things when they went there. You know, it was like how I was doing, what we were currently doing in class. Unfortunately, they were giving pointers to my parents on how I should do better. And then my parents were like, you're not, giving him, accurate assistance in the classroom, which was true. But like I said, I'm not going to go into that because it's a mess of its own. But
that's interesting. But okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it was both ways. I had my issues because of blindness and visual impairment. They had their issues because they didn't necessarily know how to teach me. And my person who was working with us kept on clashing with me and my parents. And because of that, we didn't get the accurate assistance and support that we should have gotten when I was in my early years of school. Like I said, though, going progressively into my later years, that we had that support. But it'd be like, how you're doing, updates. It was, both a good and kind of a stressful time. But, that's open house for you.
Well, it's now, my experience of the two open houses, and Jason's like, oh, no, is that I really never attended a lot of them. My wife, the kids were all at my wife's school. Why do I need to attend that? Jen's handling that stuff. But as my daughter, this is the first one I've been able to attend an open house. I've gone to some parent-teacher conferences for both kids, Anastasia and Ava. Annika's open, like, orientation, Max's orientation. But when it comes to specifically enough sitting through open house, I literally just want to just pull whatever hair I have left out of my head. The reason is because let's kind of pick it up, people. Let's make it interesting, entertaining for me. I want to know.
Why?
Why do you want
teachers to entertain you?
I want entertainment, meaning I wanted more entertainment, some good thought-provoking things to talk to the kids about, what they've been seeing, what's happening, opening up and more to a question and answer period of time instead of going through all this. You know, have a quick PowerPoint. Okay, let's go with questions and just let it open it up and let people start firing away. I think then that will be where then you could have more, okay, this is what parents are concerned about. This is what parents are looking at. And now we can make sure we can go send those emails. But if you, this is one of the biggest pet peeves I have a problem with. Teachers, you're going through your open house beginning process. You say, let's save questions to the end of the presentation. Don't get interrupted 15 times with questions throughout. That just absolutely annoys me. Jason, would you ever allow that kind of open house to happen if you were running one?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, it's what I do.
No, so, yeah, but wouldn't you let the questions? Wouldn't you let the questions?
Last night.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's hear.
What am I going to do? Tell my parents not to ask questions?
No, save them to the end. Allow the presentation to go through and save it to the end.
Come on, man. Please. The adults are going to ask questions when they want to ask questions.
Too bad.
Especially when they feel like they're your boss.
So you think about it. It's like, here's the opening statement. You're Bill Cowher or you're Mike Tomlin or you're Jeff or whatever. And they say the statement at a press conference. Then you ask questions. Imagine if Tomlin's talking about the game and, hey, Mike, what do you think of this? So we didn't play well. How did you play well, Mike? No, you first present yourself and then ask questions. That interrupting stuff drives me bananas.
Oh, they drive you bananas, but that's not how that's not how life works.
I just wish I could stream these things on Facebook Live. That would be just really interesting. But I think I'd get in trouble, especially for my wife. It was at St. Mary's, right, Jason?
Probably.
Now, Peter,
she would probably kill you.
Exactly. So, Jason, what I'm saying is, why can't we have open house, like where you're doing a presentation and saving questions to the end? I thought you would do that, especially the politician that you are, Jason.
Absolutely not. I like to do press junkets, but we ask the question. What do I do with my open house? This is who I am. This is what the class is. This is what we do. It's my expectation. Do you have any questions for me? No? Okay, goodbye. That's essentially what I do.
Well, then you do. You don't let them ask questions till it's the end after you present yourself. So give me.
They ask questions whenever they want to.
But they don't really care in high school. They're disengaged, right, the parents?
Not the ones that show up to open house.
Yeah, the ones that do. What percentage show up to open house? This is a great question for your
That's another story altogether.
So they're more likely to vote than show up to open house then.
I guess.
But the way it's set up is just how's a high school? I remember, I think it was a situation where you're in your room and then they can come in throughout the time when they visit, right? Or is it
the way we do is they can come in and then they can go up to they can watch their kid's schedule. So they watch their kid's schedule, come see me for X amount of time. I talk to them about the things I want to talk to them about. Ask them if they have any questions. If they do, I answer the questions. And then make sure that they know how to contact me if they have any issues.
And but I just think, see, I think it's a little different. Let's just say you have a room of 30 people. So which open house I'd like better? I'd say the public school one. The reason I like the public school one better is because they presented, then they allowed questions. And that didn't lead to lots of interruptions. Some people did interrupt, but it wasn't so disjointed. But if you have just interruption after interruption, I just can't stand that because the questions could be asked later. I guess that's me as a journalist in certain things. But, Peter, I am now interested in this whole topic. So you... And when you with blind and visual impairment, you really needed an advocate throughout this process where they didn't know how to handle it right, right? It sounded like in your elementary days, they just weren't figuring out how to assist you in the correct way, it sounds like.
Well, you see, and the big problem with that is that they were telling me what I needed, not allowing us to say what I needed. You know what I mean? Allowing me to voice how I learned or how I didn't learn. You know what I mean? It was more so you're too young. You wouldn't know how you learn. And then the same thing with my parents. They were like, no, you're not an educator. You don't know how he would learn. And it was just, and because we were put into the system this way, and because, you know, we only had one specific contact because the school trusted the person who was supposedly the specialist on this, we had a lot of issues because I wanted to voice a lot of my thoughts. I wasn't allowed to, my parents weren't allowed to, so we had to go through what was supposedly just given to me, and it didn't work. It just plain didn't, you know. And like a lot of the adaptations and things that I needed when I was when I was younger, I didn't receive at all. When I got into high school, I was learning about Braille. I was learning about magnifiers. I was learning about adaptations to tests, to projects, to work, you know, that would have greatly assisted me when I was younger, which is unfortunate. But, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be the person I am today and the advocate that I am if this wouldn't have happened. So, I mean...
You learn from this process. So when we get back, I saved the last topic for last. Again, if I was teasing on my Total Education Hour page, this question was the last question to end the show, and Jason's going to love it. And we got an article to read, and I'm teasing everyone to wait to the next break. I mean, wait till we'll be back in 2 and 2. You're listening to Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org, #WRCT. When we get back, Jason, the public school guy, Peter Elvich. We'll talk a cool topic. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Total Education Hour on 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and we're streaming live at WRCT.org, #WRCT. Do not head from Oakland to the North Hills, where you're going to have to go past where the Liberty Bridge exit is. You'll be backed up for hours. And I'm sure people have made that mistake. I definitely made it a couple days ago. And it was very frustrating. Tomorrow's going to be a crazy day. As Jason says, oh, here he goes. Here comes his name dropping. I'm going to be interviewing someone from E! News about the Emmys coming up. And also interviewing a star X Game person who's now on an Amazon Prime series show. And much, much more. Interesting day tomorrow as I venture to the allergist. So, again, maybe I will reveal my medical records very soon as I head to the allergist tomorrow. Now, the topic we're going to discuss is very interesting. Again, it's available at my Total Education Hour page. I found this through the Twitter sphere. It says, why aren't the 2016 presidential candidates talking about K-12 education? Let's ask Peter that question first. Why do you think they're not?
I don't know. It's just, in my opinion, it seems to be that they're, well, for, you know, from my experience, it seems to be that they're more focused on, for once, you know, more other issues and don't necessarily see education as a priority at the moment. You know, they see other things as being priorities. But I guess if they were talking about education and they wouldn't be talking about, you know, K-12, I think it's, you know, I think they're more so like college bound, you know, talking about colleges and numbers and different things. It's just, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's for like K through 12, it just seems like when people think of it, you know, they think, okay, it's the general, you know, kind of general schooling kind of thing. And then when they go into college, then they kind of see college or other types of schools being more so of a thing they need to focus on. You know what I mean?
Okay, Jason, why aren't they talking about it, in your opinion? Then we'll get to the article.
So they are talking about it. Hillary Clinton's already put out a full education plan. Donald Trump has put out whatever he considers to be an education plan, which I personally think is not much of anything. They are talking about it. It's just not getting covered because both these candidates have deep flaws and what sells paper, but is the flaws.
Okay.
So they are talking about it.
Let's see why Jeffrey.
It's not getting covered.
Let's see why this Jeffrey doesn't believe that. Okay, so it says Jeffrey Henning, professor of political science education. If you've been listening for deep and meaty discussion of K-12 education policy and presidential campaign year, you've almost certainly been disappointed. Post-secondary education has received some attention, catalyzed by Bernie Sanders' call for college tuition and picked up by Hillary Clinton's somewhat more modest pledge to make college debt free. There have been shout-outs too for pre-K education, such as Clinton's pledge to give every four-year-old in America access to a high-quality preschool. Not surprising given the Democrats' national support of public investment in young children. Somewhat more surprising in light is the Republicans' aversion to new spending and Washington-led reform was Ivanka Trump's convention speech promising that her father would focus on Ivanka Trump's convention speech promising, that her father would focus on making quality childcare affordable and accessible for all. You know, I like that. Again, I'm sure, Jason, you were applauding Donald Trump's plan for the tax credit, right?
No. That's a voucher.
No, it's not this is more like for working and paid leave and stuff, Jason. Have you not studied that one?
It's a voucher. It's a voucher. And he doesn't pay for it, actually. What he does is he says he's going to reduce the amount of corruption for people going on workman's comp. He's not actually putting out anything serious or anything that could actually be done.
Okay. Making quality for child affordable. So, but K-12 has not been high on either candidate's list of talking points. And since it's where most of the federal attention to education traditionally has been aimed, it's fair to wonder why have we not been hearing so little about it? Jason still disagrees with this. Politics is a complicated stuff. There are multiple shifting factors that might account for silence. The two in particular are not frequently commented on. Do we lose Jason? If we lost Jason, Jason will call back. Peter, you hear me, right?
No, I'm good.
You hear me, Peter, right?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Say again? Yeah, again.
Okay. Good. All right. As he's left Verizon. Political campaigns involve judgment calls about whether it's more important to mobilize your partisan base or reach out to an independent base. So I guess what he's talking about, and there's a ton of more to go into this, Jason, is that really you say Hillary has, but they're not really bringing this in the debate scene. They're talking maybe eliminating Common Core, different things. This is something that has been spent so much money, K-12 education, and yet no real good results. Why bring this up for either candidate when both parties in some way want to do reform and have had no success, right?
Well, reform has been tried by the right for the last 20 plus years in the school choice movement. But they're talking about it. They're putting out plans. To one extent or the other, it's just not being covered because, like you said, it doesn't sell papers.
Right. and it's not going to make a shift at all in this campaign, Jason, right?
No. Both these candidates are so universally disliked, it's unbelievable at this point. And that's the truth. It's just one of those situations. And education is almost never a sexy topic. It almost never gets any credit. So now you have two incredibly unpopular candidates who are being incredibly negative towards each other. And so what's education going to do to help?
Nothing, Jason. And you know, and remember, I'm under that basket of deplorables, right, Jason?
I guess if you want to call yourself that, you consider yourself a racist?
No, but that if you define that,
she called it deplorable. So.
Yeah, but she also said and others too. That was really just not a very bright move. I could never see President Obama do that. Could you, Jason?
No, but people try to say he did whenever he talked about people clutching onto their guns and God.
Yeah, but that was on. He didn't know he was being recorded.
Right, I know, I get it. I understand that. But the truth is that she was talking. I mean, when you woke this about the grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke, you won't say he's a bad person.
Yes, that's.
Give me up some questions.
So, because Donald Trump was just trying for everyone to love him because he still thought he was on The Apprentice. Now he's a puppet.
Is that what Mike?
Good.
Yeah. No, what it comes down to is that the 65% of the people who support Donald Trump believe that President Obama is a Muslim.
Oh, jeez.
Over 50% believe that not only is he a Muslim, but he wasn't even born in the United States.
Oh, jeez.
So these are the vast majority of his supporters.
So, but how can you lead a whole country? And this is a great... I guess how we talk about education, how we keep this country together. How can you lead a country if you're so divided to the point where you have two different countries in a way of thought processes between...
You don't have two different countries. You have two different points of view. See, you take it to the hyperbolic perspective. Two different points of view. Not two different countries.
Well,
we've always had many different points of view.
But how can you lead all of them then, Jason?
You just do. It's what we do in this country.
Right, I understand.
We've had contentious debates and arguments and political campaigns before in the past. We just do.
All right. We agree that
we don't like it and we accept it and we move forward.
All right, so we have only a couple more minutes. We're going to try to get one more interesting topic in. One said, again, our good friends over at educationnews.org, grade level allocation failing millions of students. No. Thousands denied access to special education in Texas. I'm so surprised by that, Jason. Texas denied special education? Texas and education and their problem? No, I don't think that would happen. Okay, next one. LendEDU report. Private schools correlate with private loan debt. No. Apple initiative sets out to prove everyone can code. Well, maybe they could decide to design a better iPhone. What the heck is this new iPhone? What a joke. Bullying due to obesity carries emotional effects. I think that's not really, Jason. That's a huge thought process. And we got to watch your phone is very interesting, Jason, when you get all fired up from a comment. And Peter would agree, right, Peter?
Yeah, he agrees.
Okay. Here's one. Minnesota lawsuit combines transgender student twerking and Title IX. Okay. No, thank you, Jason. I saw Minnesota, Peter, and I said, no, we can't go that. Let's go to educationweek.org with our time flying. We have fun. See if we could grab another topic. Because I thought that presidential one would be better. That article was garbage. Bogus, terrible. Why punishment won't stop a bully? That's pretty simple, but let's just go to that conversation, Jason, and uncover it. Why won't punishment stop a bully? Tell me.
A bully bullies for because of a lot of reasons, not because they're afraid of getting caught. Insecurities, that's what they've been taught. usually when a person bullies, almost always when a person bullies, there's a reason behind it in their personal life.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and there's something more to it. I don't know about girls as much as boys, Jason, because girls, it's rampant. But with boys, they've gone through specific things in their lives that do that. But what about girls? What about the change now, Jason, that it's cool to be a bully in the girl environment more than the boys, where, you know, if we're bullying, it's because we really feel not good about ourselves?
Well, I don't know about girls being more bullies than boys. I think that
there's more of them.
Natural for both sides. I don't know about that. I think girls fight a little bit differently than boys do. Boys punch each other. Girls fight catty. But that doesn't make them bullies. It just makes them catty.
Okay, I wonder if Hillary agree with you or put you in the basket. No. Bullying at a school has attracted an enormous amount of attention, spurring academic studies and popular books, regulations, and training sessions for educators. By now, its a status as a serious problem is widely acknowledged and should be. We can never go back to the days when bullying was regarded as boys will be boys, rite of passage, something that victims were left to deal with alone. But as with the other ills, both within and beyond our schools, some responses are much less constructive than others. The least thoughtful strategy is. So, I believe punishment will work. Let's get Peter's take before the end of the show. Do you think punishing the bully will stop him from doing it or her from doing it?
I would say this is that punishment, I believe, is something you need to have. Will it necessarily stop someone from being a bully? No, but at least that would minimize the amount of people who continue to be a bully. Because I was in those days where, you know, boys will be boys type thing, and I never got assistance when I got bullied, and that really stuck. So I believe that something should be done. I don't know if it will necessarily be effective all the time, but I believe that something does need to be done.
Okay, Jason. So you don't think it will help? That you don't think the punishment will help? What would you do then?
You got to find out what the root cause of the problem is. You got to address what the problem is with the kid. And why is that kid bullying? Is it because there's something going on at home? Is that kid being abused by them at home? Why is that kid feeling inadequate? Do they feel that they need to complete themselves by making somebody else feel worse about themselves? So, I mean, I think you got to do some digging and find out why. If it's a situation where the kid's, getting abused at home, then you got to get them help. If it's something else, you got to deal with it. But I think it's more than just you did this and we have to punish you. Yes, punishment for poor behavior, agreed. But it doesn't always have to be immediately punished.
I think zero tolerance works. I think that this article is full of it. Even though I don't have the whole gist of the article, I think that you have to punish the bully to stop it. And if you do, it will stop. And if you have a zero tolerance that starts in kindergarten all the way up, it will be mostly you'll get some outliers who decide to bully, but most people won't. And there are schools that are those safe schools where bullying is just not tolerated. And there's a good discipline plan in place to stop it before it gets out of control. Reminds me of Stephen Covey's schools, which Jason, again, was such a fan of. Remember, we were talking about that, I guess, a year ago. That's kind of, I don't know how I came up with that, but Jason was such a fan of Stephen Covey's stuff that bullying was pretty much not around at all because of how he ran his schools. But I thought Jason wouldn't be a fan of Stephen Covey, but he was. All right, well, Jason, take care, man. And thank you, Peter. Fun conversations. We'll talk next week. Okay, guys?
Yes.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. All right, that was Jason, the public school guy. And Peter Elvidge is, again, Jarrett. Jason has a different phone number. And Jarrett's not returning my calls. Huh. Who can believe it as we're going closer and closer to the 7th anniversary of the network? Fantastic. Take care, guys, and we'll talk next week.
You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director at pa@wrct.org or by calling 412-621-0728.
Progressive presents Mindfulness with Flo.
Your aura brims with confidence. The Name Your Price tool has given you policy options based on your budget. A source of great power rises from within, like a Tyrannosaurus Rex that can shoot dragons out of its eyes, riding on a tank.
Get insurance based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fashion emergency hotline.
Help! I got rid of all my clothes.
Breathe and explain.
During Fashion Week, everyone looked fantastic, so I decided I needed a new wardrobe.
Well, strut to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yes, they have gorgeous floral tops and super on-trend pixie pants to turn your sidewalk into a catwalk. And right now, pixie pants are just $25.
$25?
Yep. Right now, pants and tops at Old Navy are 30 to 50% off.
30 to 50% off? Amazing. Thank you.
Don't thank me. Thank Old Navy.
Valid 9/15 to 9/23. Excludes denim and active pants.